Welcome to The Message. I'm John Wells. Imagine you live in a rental apartment, and imagine further that you live pretty tight to the line of affordability, given your income and expenses. And imagine that one morning, when going through your mail, you find that one of the items is a letter from the building's landlord. The landlord is announcing that your rent is about to go up, and substantially so, as much as 4.8%. This is happening in the real world for tenants at a Hamilton apartment building, and some of them have been fighting back.
You're telling the board, you know, look beyond what's on paper here. Mm-hmm. I think you're saying looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Can you expand that a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, I'm not from Hamilton. It's not my city by any means, but just from getting to know a lot of folks from here, it seems that this neighborhood is one that traditionally is a working class neighborhood. It's a place where a lot of folks, former union workers, people who worked in the industries in Hamilton, it's where they've lived. They've lived there a long, long time. And the reality is with these changes, this is going to price them out. Incomes, pensions in Canada, they're not going up. And rent is. So where are these people going to go?
That was the voice of Kevin LaForest. He's the lawyer representing tenants at an East End apartment complex called Stony Creek Towers, who declared a rent strike last May. He was speaking with Hamilton Spectator reporter Tevye Morrow, who has been covering the issue and the people involved from every angle. Tevye was interviewing LaForest at a landlord and tenant board hearing last week in the city. And here with us is Tevye for this episode that I've titled Rent Wars. First of all, Tevye, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for bringing the audio clips. We've heard one so far for Aisha Nasser, our producer, to incorporate. Among the issues you cover, the spec, is affordable housing, of which this is one of the stories, and the politics of homelessness. Why does the topic interest you?
I think the topic interests me because, I was a renter for many years. Mm-hmm. And you sort of have that sense of unease sometimes when you get a letter from your landlord, you don't quite understand it, you feel that you have to comply with it. And then over the years of covering this beat, I started to really learn about things that I didn't know before, and maybe was a little too compliant when I received a letter from a landlord. And you know, told I had to pay X number of dollars more within a certain time period, or had to sign something that I wasn't sure if I had to sign. The other thing is, I think we have a lot of renters in Hamilton. I don't have the exact breakdown right now, but it affects a lot of people when there is a rising rental rate in the city that's happening pretty quickly.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, you talk about, I mean, it can be an intimidating experience for someone who's renting and to understand what's going on. And you've written, in terms of the case of Stony Creek Towers, it's located in Riverdale, a neighborhood in Hamilton's East End, bordering Stony Creek, that you wrote has the highest proportion of recent immigrants in Hamilton, correct?
Right.
And so, you know we're dealing with people that are involved in this. Many of them have additional challenges to understanding the system to someone like yourself.
Right. So I think the four towers that make up the Stony Creek Towers have been for many years sort of an affordable enclave of the city where, you know, working class people and recent immigrants who are, you know, just trying to land on their feet in a new country have gone to live with reasonable rents comparatively, right? Mm-hmm. And that is starting to change with the new owner of this, in part with the new owner of this building, which is a large real estate investment trust called InterRent. Mm-hmm. They've been renovating units and charging much more per in rent per unit as people vacate. That's one thing they're allowed to do when a tenant leaves a unit. The other mechanism they're pursuing, which is the subject of this rent strike, is called an above guideline increase,
right,
which is permitted in Ontario. Basically, a landlord can apply to the landlord and tenant board for this to reclaim basically extraordinary expenses through a rental increase
That's over and above the standard increase, which is how much?
This year it's 1.8%.
1.8, yeah. That's the guideline, right?
Now, so these are called AGIs for short, and they can get a maximum of 3% per year through an AGI. So that's really what's being disputed here with the tenants at Stony Creek Towers. They're saying, we don't think the expenses that you're trying to make us pay through this AGI are legitimate. We think some of them are just cosmetic or meant to enhance the prestige of the complex. We don't think we should have to pay that through a rental increase. We think that should be the landlord's responsibility. Mm-hmm. The landlord is disputing that, saying, no, we're investing millions of dollars into these buildings because they were neglected for many years. For example, sidewalks, that were cracked, or doors that didn't meet the fire code, mm-hmm. things like that. And there's some outside work they did as well. So that is the nitty gritty of the hearing.
Right. Is the 4.8% increase, that's AGI, is it unprecedented? How big of an overrun increase is this?
It's not unprecedented. Yeah. Unprecedented in the context of AGIs.
Right.
This same landlord, for example, achieved something similar just recently through the landlord and tenant board at another building in a complex it owns in East Hamilton.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. So it's pretty. It's become pretty standard. In fact, there's an increase in the number of AGI applications that are taking place in Hamilton over in the recent years.
Right. Now, the rent strike that went on for a long time, many months, has received a lot of attention. You wrote about how a Hamilton rapper named Lee Reed weighed in on this with a record he titled "The Steel City," and he spelled Steel STEAL.
Right.
So there's a lot of emotion involved. But I gather, you're in trying to, obviously, as with all your coverage, you're trying to balance this out. You've been trying to get responses from InterRent, the landlord, as far as explaining their position, which you've explained here, the basics of it. But I gather they haven't been very receptive to you and your questions to them. Is that correct?
That is correct. I think. They're extremely concerned about how this rent strike is playing out in the press.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember that they're supported by shareholders or unit holders, as they call them. So this is an investment instrument. So bad publicity that may indicate or allege untoward behavior, could be really damaging. And in fact, the rent strikers, who have been helped by an organization called the Hamilton Tenants Solidarity Network, have targeted one of InterRent's main investors in the downtown Toronto Financial District mm-hmm. once to, and got them on video and went into the corporate offices and tried to explain to them why they thought this was a bad investment.
Right.
So that has been a strategy. So InterRent, which has an in-house management property manager called CLV, they're related and they're based in Ottawa. They have at times responded to me in person through their PR person,
mm-hmm.
but the last time I tried to talk to them at the hearing, everyone was there, all the executives were there, including their PR person. They flat out refused to address any questions, to which I know they have had answers before. So I think they're just pretty sensitive to how they are seen in the press.
Yeah.
And I think the rent strike, although it's centered in Hamilton, East Hamilton, even more specifically, has a lot of eyes on it around
right.
Ontario.
Yeah, no, the optics are difficult for them, no doubt with this. Are renters at risk of being removed from their homes with this? Is that the end game they fear?
I think there is that risk on a few levels. The one, there is a risk of being evicted,
right.
First of all, for withholding rent. Some of the rent strikers have received eviction notices, but managed to employ a strategy that has allowed them to stay in their units. So I should mention that, for example, when someone is believes they're going to get evicted for withholding rent, they may just, they've banked the money. You know, they have that money order or rent check ready, and they'll just go and pay.
Right. Right.
And that will get them off the hook for a little while, buy them a little more time, but then continue the rent strike afterward.
Yes.
So that is why some of the organizers with the Tenant Solidarity Network say they're really, you know, they feel like this is very courageous what these people are trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
It really seems like a David and Goliath situation. People could, I guess, lose their homes if they, I don't know if that's, I don't think that's the verb I would use, lose, but they could take a cash incentive,
mm-hmm.
and from the landlord agree to that, and then try their luck on elsewhere in the rental market, which is a tough gamble because everything's going up, mm-hmm. and they may have been in a rent controlled unit.
Right.
So it's a tough situation. But I think the question you're asking is, if the rent goes up through this AGI,
yes.
will people lose their homes? They say many people will.
Right. Right.
Or they won't be able to make ends meet.
The part of the context here that you've written about, you know, in terms of the landlord seeking to receive higher income from the rates so they can upgrade the building and it becomes more of an investment for them. In one of your stories, you quoted Martine August, a professor at University of Waterloo, and she used the G word, which has become, at least in Hamilton, I think, since the vandalism on Lock Street, something of a dirty word in town, that is to say gentrification that could be going on here. That, you know, they improve the building, increase the rents, get a different type of renter into the building. Is that, do you think that's what's happening here? Is that what the people who are protesting this allege is going on here?
Well, so Martine has done a study of Toronto with a colleague that looks at the role of real estate investment trusts and AGIs in hiking rents across the city.
Right.
So they've actually done sort of a data and spatial analysis of how this has affected, how this has played out in Toronto. I think Martine's point is that these real estate investment trusts in their documents aimed at shareholders and potential investors will use words like repositioning
yes.
properties that are underperforming,
right.
and driving rents and decreasing costs, such, you know, maybe it involves shutting down laundry facilities or using sub-metering and passing on the hydro costs to renters.
Mm-hmm.
So on one end, real estate investment trusts, in this case InterRent, they're very clear with the investors about their goals of increasing rents, driving rents, and reducing costs,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps renting to, you know, a different kind of person who can afford that.
Right.
But on the other side, you know, their statements to me that they have made, you know, via email or some on occasion in person, they said, we really care about the communities that we operate, and we want to make sure that we have safe, clean, and decent housing for people, which is probably the case. It probably makes financial sense in the end as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there are two sides to this.
Right, right. I guess I imagine they'd argue they're trying to respond to what the market will bear for these buildings, and that there are people out there who will pay the rents for this, and then I guess in a perfect world, those who couldn't afford that would live somewhere else. And there's, you know, obviously there's the human face to this is the compelling part of the story, and it's perhaps, you know, why the optics are so difficult for the company. You spoke with a few of the strike captains involved in the rent protest. In this case, a longtime tenant whose name is Stan Parker. So let's hear the clip from Stan.
Can you tell me a little bit about how long you lived in the building and what you have liked about living in the building?
I've lived in the building for 44 years, since 1975. And before the buildings were, all four of them were individual. You had your own parking lot. Each building had their own parking lot. You had a superintendent and an assistant superintendent that was on the clock 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if you had a problem, you could contact them, and the problem usually got rectified.
Do you feel like you're going to stay in your unit after this is all done? And
well, most likely I'm going to have to do without a few things if the depending on how high the AGI is. It's a lot of people like myself are on a pension, and as it is now, three quarters of my pension pays the rent.
Right. Yeah. So what are other people going to do?
Some people are they're cutting back. They're lower their food. They've got to cut back on their food. When CLP purchased buildings, they got the building very cheap, all four buildings, and they knew they had to spend money on it to do repairs. When they purchased it, they did a walkthrough through all the buildings, so they knew exactly what they were getting into. They offered several people buyouts, so they could gut their apartment, redo them, and then they're charging $1,400, $1,500, $1,600 a month, rent, plus hydro, plus parking. Where tenants like me, the hydro and the parking, that's all included in my rent. And this, if this increase goes through that they want, means I'm going to be paying $50, $60 more a month.
So your point is that there should be money from the property sale
to do these repairs, to fix a building up, not make tenants pay for it.
Tevye, what do these strike captains do with respect to this protest that had been going on for months?
Well, the strike captains, what they'll do is, my understanding is that they'll go through these four tall buildings and knock on doors and try to rally the troops, get people involved, encourage people to withhold their rent. They are also involved in the organization of the different events I mentioned earlier, the storming of the corporate headquarters in Toronto of that one investor. They also organized a march out in Ottawa at InterRent and CLV's main headquarters, and outside the large home of the CEO of the Real Estate Investment Trust. So there's been all these actions that have taken place, and they'll be front and center involving with fundraisers as well.
Right. You spoke with another of the strike captains, and you really hear the passion and the pain, you know, in the voice of these folks. But you spoke with another one. His name is Kevin O'Toole. So Aisha, let's play that clip as well.
I came to Stony Creek Towers 7 years ago after my wife died. I couldn't afford where I was living because she had an income. I couldn't afford it, so I moved in there. What they did for me as a community, accepted me, etc. I walked in there below bankruptcy. I had nothing. I built it up. Thank God. Touch wood. Thank God. And I'm working 3 days a week. I'm on pension. I'm lucky because I can still work 3 days a week. But it was the 15th floor where I live. I can leave the door open. Nobody goes in. The dogs run on up and down the hallway. Everybody knows everybody. We exchange Christmas cards. The whole building, the whole towers is like that. It is a community. It's not just new Canadians, stiffs, working stiffs. It's a community. And everybody, even if you don't know them, will say, hi, how are you? That's what I love about the area.
It's interesting, you know, Tevye, he talks about the community of people in the building. Obviously, there's this perception and this, you know, that it's not just a bunch of faceless individual renters, but there's a community. It's a powerful argument, really.
Right.
Now, O'Toole doesn't believe that their protests will in the end be successful in terms of the decision that will be coming soon from the Landlord and Tenant Board. Let's hear him on that.
I know we're going to lose. Our problem is, our question is, how much we're going to lose by.
Now, Tevye, the renters did not want this to go to a hearing at all at one point, correct?
That's right. I think that's been the goal of the pressure campaign all along. They were trying to, the rent strikers were trying to get their landlord to the negotiating table to try and resolve this dispute outside of the landlord and tenant board, outside of the hearing. Mm-hmm. The landlord has said, you know, the landlord and tenant board is really the appropriate venue, the appropriate mechanism for resolving rental disputes. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what many other landlords in Ontario do. The renters and some of the members of the Solidarity Committee would say the landlord and tenant board is really weighed against tenants and routinely rules in favor of landlords. They're of the belief that it's a losing battle. Mm-hmm. I think the landlords would have a different opinion on that and say, no, it's a partial objective body that has a process and prescribed a set of criteria that it bases its decisions on. However, I think you'll find that tenant advocates will say, you know what, and not just tenant advocates, but I've heard city politicians say this as well, that, you know what, this process is really, the tenant really is at a disadvantage because, number one, they don't have all the information that the landlord can use, like spreadsheets of that, you know, that show where they spent their money and how they spent their money and when they spent their money. They don't have the benefit of calling on expert witnesses like engineers and pulling up technical reports. They don't have the benefit of high-priced legal teams either. So actually, it's because of this perceived power imbalance that city council, a committee of city council has directed staff to pursue the idea of a tenant defense fund, which would put a pot of money, I think $50,000 or so, I can't remember the exact dollar figure, into a fund that certain tenants could draw upon to help mount their challenges before the landlord tenant board.
Interesting. We were talking before, there have been cases where renters and landlords have negotiated outside the board, having a hearing and arrived at some solutions without taking it to that step?
That's right. I think it was in 2017 that there was a rent strike in Parkdale, neighborhood of Toronto, and those tenants, those rent strikers, managed to get the landlord to agree to something that seemed to be satisfactory to both sides outside of the hearing. Mm-hmm.
Now, when is the decision coming that comes out of this landlord and tenant board hearing, when is that decision expected to come down?
The landlord and tenant board member who was the adjudicator told the hearing on the last day that he expected to have something in 3 weeks. So, and that decision would be, 2 weeks from now. And it would be a written decision that would be sent to the parties.
Right. Well, we have another audio clip that sort of leads into my last question. This one is the voice of Mike Wood, who was the chair of a local advocacy group on the issue called Hamilton Acorn that is calling for tighter rent controls from the provincial government of Premier Doug Ford. So let's hear from Mike Wood.
What we're seeing today is a lot of displacement is happening aggressively and quick. So what we're actually scared of is a lot of people are going to be displaced to the streets, becoming homeless, nowhere to live. And then the municipality is going to be downloaded all onto them, where they're going to have to come up with ways to bring money into the city to actually, you know, bring some homes or places for these people to be. We've got food banks that are overwhelmed. We have shelters are over 130% overwhelmed at the maximum rate that they can take people in, but they're struggling as well. Everybody's struggling going into this. So that's why we need affordable housing more built, not just even in Hamilton, but across Ontario. Of course, we're not with the Bill 66, we're against that because that's just going to destroy the green belt. We need to leave that alone, and I'm sure there's other solutions and better ways to come about building affordable housing. and the government needs to step up and do what they should be doing and not make excuses and stop making loopholes for landlords to use to continue to displace tenants.
So he's talking big picture, and he's talking about housing supply and sort of the crux of the issue. And so, you know, Tevye, I wanted to ask you where you think this all might be going from here, not just this one case in Hamilton, but we're talking about something fundamental in terms of housing in the province under the current government and governments to come. So, I mean, how can the two sides possibly come together on this, and what is the situation the government finds itself in, and where might they go with this?
Well, I think provincially there could be a lot of turbulence over the next few years. I think the Progressive Conservatives under Doug Ford, I think the way that they're approaching this is they're saying we need to increase the rental supply in general, and that is going to provide more options, because right now we just don't have enough rental housing, and if you increase the number of units that are available on the market, you'll provide the greater possibility you will provide for people to find something that's, you know, within their budget. Other people are saying, you know, that won't work alone. You need to really make sure that we have strong rent control, and you also have to really bolster social housing, public housing, or whatever form of affordable housing that might work. So I think we are sort of at a point where these two philosophies are clashing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, you're getting at the philosophy of allowing investors and owners of these buildings to reap the best return on their investment and all that sort of thing, but then also the social component, the necessity to provide affordable housing, but which doesn't make money for investors. It's a public service, I guess, right?
I should also mention that a lot of the housing or nonprofit housing providers and people who work in social work, social services, are really counting on the federal Liberals' national housing strategy to start to bear some fruit. Some of those funds are starting to flow. For example, the federal government and money from the previous provincial government is going towards building a new housing for women on Ottawa Street, where the YWCA was torn down, and they're building this new facility.
Right.
But I think there has been some frustration that, geez, when are we going to see this money? And we got a federal election coming up. What is going to happen?
Right. Well, you know, I know coverage like yours gets the issue out there on the front burner for the public, for the politicians, because it can be an issue that gets kind of buried in the weeds a little bit if you're not one of the people who is affected by it. So I know you'll be following this closely going forward. So Tevye, thanks so much for coming in here and helping explain what is going on with this.
Thanks very much. It's my pleasure.
And to our listeners of The Message, if you have a comment or observation to offer about this issue or any other for that matter, please send an email to us at jwells@thespec.com. We will read a selection on the next episode of the podcast. For Aisha Nasser, I'm John Wells. Thanks for listening.